Okay, so just maybe Disney is not the happiest place on Earth? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday today, 21 November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So Bob Iger was the CEO of the Walt Disney Company for 15 years, and for most of that time, he didn't really put a foot wrong. He was politically astute in that corporate way. He made investors a ton of money, and in the process, he built an empire buying Pixar and Lucasfilms and Marvel as well. The blemish on that record, though, is succession planning. Disney's board yesterday dismissed Iger's hand-picked successor, Bob Chapek is his name, and asked Iger to come back and right the ship. Chapek's two or so years as CEO were marked by the pandemic, yes, and some political missteps, and it can't not be said, the $1.5 billion loss in Disney's streaming service that Chapek announced the other day. So enter now again Bob Iger on a two-year contract, which means, really, his succession planning starts now. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at what it means to start all over again.
A company's hunt for its next CEO never ends, says Jan Kors with the consulting firm Perlmutter.
A number of CEOs tell me that when they get promoted into that CEO role, one of the first questions their board has for them is, okay, who's going to be your replacement?
That's because it takes years to identify outside talent or groom someone from within. In fact, around three quarters of CEOs at companies on the S&P 500 are internal promotions. That grooming time is key because once new leaders step in, they don't get a lot of time to find their bearings. Alex Kurse is with the consulting firm Gartner.
Inside of 30 days, CEOs need to have met with all the key stakeholders inside of the organization. And inside of a quarter, they should be executing fully on their strategic vision for the organization.
Boomerang CEOs like Iger, who leave the company and return, aren't so common, though there are examples. Steve Jobs returned to Apple and Howard Schultz to Starbucks. This can signal a company in crisis or that the board is buying time to pick a new successor, which Kurse says is tricky because the talent pool was already evaluated a couple years ago.
When you take individuals, high-performing leaders, and groom them for success and don't give them that top job, it's oftentimes very hard for them to stay at the organization.
Is someone in streaming or content a good fit? Maybe. Neil Macker, an analyst at Morningstar, says finding a successor for a company like Disney is particularly difficult because it has such a huge range of products.
You're a steward of these franchises, or more accurately, characters like Mickey Mouse, who've been around for almost 100 years now, and you're blending it with not only the parks business and everything else that's attached to that, and Disney Animation and Pixar and now Marvel and Star Wars.
That mix, plus the fact that Iger's pushed off retirement several times before, is why Macker's skeptical that he's just a placeholder. It's a two-year deal, but contracts can always be renewed. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, honestly, I have no idea. I was watching the USA Wales World Cup game. Come on. But we will have the details when we do the numbers. We've come to the week of Black Friday, and after that, Cyber Monday, and yes, fine, Thanksgiving in the middle as well. Normally, this is, of course, the start of the holiday shopping season, but we are still not in normal times, you know? There's all the recession talk, inflation that y'all are well up to speed on, I'm sure, and stores still have all that stuff left over from last year. So what does that mean, do you think, for this coming weekend and this most magical time of the shopping year? Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has that one.
Let's stroll down consumerism memory lane to Black Friday 4 years ago. Local Chattanooga TV was there live to capture a swarm of shoppers flooding into a store at Hamilton Place Mall to buy fleeces at 5:30 in the morning. Nobody was hurt, though the clerk did have to stand on the table to get out of the way of the screaming hordes. Now, that whole thing may may not be a thing anymore.
I don't know what the future of Black Friday and Cyber Monday look like, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be quite the frenzy that it had been in the past.
Andrew Lipsman covers retail and e-commerce at Insider Intelligence. It's not that we consumers don't want a deal. Oh, we do. It's just that there are a lot more days on which to get those deals now.
Since the pandemic, when we first had all the concerns about getting shipments on time and whether items would be in stock, consumers started buying early in October. We also had our first October Prime Day, and that really set off an early holiday shopping season.
So it's not your imagination. Holiday shopping season has been creeping up earlier, but it's also different this year. You've got inflation and lots of extra stuff in warehouses and stores.
Retail inventories are up about 20% year on year from last year.
Michael Zadinnik is an economist at S&P Global Market Intelligence. Expect discounts and promotions early and often, he says. His best estimate for how this will all go, sales on paper will increase 4.5% this year. But
for as much as sales have increased, we expect prices to increase more.
After you account for inflation, Zadinnik predicts holiday sales will actually have fallen by 1.2%. Discounts aside, consumers will pay more and get less. Rod Sides is with Deloitte Insights.
So on average, they're going to spend more per gift. So the number of gifts are going down from 16 to 9.
So we'll be shopping longer for fewer gifts that are more expensive. Fa-la-la-la-la. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
I saw a great line today from Neil Irwin, occasional guest on this program, also the chief economic correspondent at Axios, talking about the cryptocurrency exchange that imploded a week or 10 days or so ago. The FTX Omnishambles, Neil called it. And you can't argue, really, given the bankruptcy, the accusations of wrongdoing and the investigations and the ever-escalating amounts owed its creditors. At the very best, FTX is a black eye for the crypto economy, which is saying a lot because crypto was already operating at a pretty significant trust deficit. So, what happens now? Marketplace's Matt Levin has that one.
I know it feels like a million years ago, but remember the whole Terra Luna thing? That was the other big crypto platform that crashed in May. It wiped out about $40 billion along with it. Well, Kyle Hamburger remembers.
It was about a third of my savings at that time, so it was pretty important.
Hamburger, that is his real name, not a pseudonym, is an IT consultant in San Diego. He lost all of that money in a company called Stable Gains, a crypto savings startup which, unbeknownst to him and most of its users, was tied to Terra Luna. The loss shook him up, but it didn't shake him out of crypto.
I trusted the industry at large, yes. I don't know what gave me that sense of trust, probably just the fact that you constantly saw people becoming new millionaires.
Hamburger put $25,000 into another crypto savings platform called Donut. When news broke that FTX was going under, Hamburger immediately withdrew most of his money. He did it just in time. Donut has since suspended withdrawals.
I just don't trust crypto as a whole right now. And it's just, there's so much uncertainty that it's scary to be in this space.
Hamburger's only crypto holdings now are about $100 left over in an account at Coinbase, a crypto exchange where investors can buy and sell different cryptocurrencies. FTX was also a crypto exchange, and that's where Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong would like the comparisons to end.
For the last 10 years, we've been working to make this industry more trusted, and my fear was that people would somehow conflate this with what we're doing.
Armstrong argues that because Coinbase is based in the U.S. and listed on the NASDAQ, the type of fraud Bahamas-based FTX allegedly committed would at the very least be much harder to pull off. He says a lack of clear American regulation, like whether certain cryptocurrencies are securities or commodities, is pushing crypto into places where shady characters can thrive.
I think what we need is thoughtful, clear regulation. And once that clarity emerges in the U.S., I'm hoping we can build this industry in a more trusted and regulated way onshore.
For a technology that's supposed to be trustless, you're now hearing crypto execs like Armstrong talk a lot about rebuilding trust. Ironically, that lack of regulation in the U.S., that may have kept the fallout from FTX from being worse. Lee Reiners teaches fintech law at Duke.
Regulation can confer legitimacy, right? And not only that, but regulation then can make it possible for new connections to form between the crypto economy and the traditional financial system.
Reiners is a longtime crypto skeptic. He says in 5 years with real regulation, he's pretty sure words like Dogecoin and NFT will fade from the vernacular.
Ultimately, for crypto to have value, it needs to provide a new product or service that people think is useful. And I just don't see it happening.
Both crypto skeptics and enthusiasts agree that right now is an inflection point. Either Reiners is right and this will all just fizzle into a small group of Bitcoin true believers who will never trust central banks, or maybe in 5 years we'll all be wearing VR headsets using Ethereum to buy and sell Bored Apes in a Web3-powered metaverse. For his part, Kyle Hamburger hasn't sworn off putting money back into crypto someday.
I mean, I can't say that I won't. Who knows what the future will bring in terms of safety?
But you know the old saying, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, and I'm putting my money in an FDIC-insured savings account. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
The World Cup started yesterday, and over the next month or so, something like 5 billion people are going to tune in. People will be watching at work, present company included, and at watch parties as well, and in particular at sports bars. But with those raucous crowds at sports bars comes a need for meticulous planning. That is the story today on our series, My Economy.
I am Mike Idle, the owner of the Nomad World Pub in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I opened it back in 1995. I was sort of taking a year off, a gap year between studies, and came across a person who was trying to revitalize a pretty historic and famous area of Milwaukee that was kind of down on its knees at the time. And she had a building that was a dive bar and she wanted to get rid of it. And I fixed it up and I started out right around St. Patrick's Day in 1995. I had been accidentally at the 1990 World Cup in Italy and was immediately hooked, not just by what was on the pitch, but what was happening in all the plazas and towns and everywhere you went and just the fever that everybody had. And so in 98, you know, that was our first crack at it. So maybe, you know, 25 people to 50 people might show up and it was really fun. And you could sense the passion. We had a very upset Brazilian in 98 throw his bar stool through our window and then immediately apologize, say he was going to pay for it, and he was back for the next game. This will be our 7th World Cup here in Milwaukee. So, you know, by 2014, 2018, those tournaments, we had thousands of people every day over the course of a month. So, you know, if we can get 20,000 people, 30,000 people, 40 coming through in the month, that would be a real big number for me. And we're still not sure how we're staffing it. We're getting people from out west who are at school, or some people are taking vacations from other jobs and coming in. So it's kind of like putting a puzzle together on how we're going to fill up these days with staff that can execute the high volume of customers that we get. It's going to be different this year, but we're putting the effort in to create as much of an experience as we can for our crowds that come from pretty much all over the Midwest and even, you know, around the world. So if you can't go to the World Cup, we like to say you should come to the Nomad.
Mike Idle, proprietor of the Nomad World Pub in Milwaukee. And look, I know I say this all the time, but no matter who you are or where you are or what you do, your story makes this economy go round. That's the truth. So share it with us, would you? marketplace.org/mycon. Coming up,
got Mother Nature at work on two sides.
And people are caught in the middle. But first, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 45 points today, about a 10%, 33,700. The NASDAQ down 121 points, 1%, closed at 11,024. The S&P 500 dipped 15 points, about 0.4%, 39.49. It's not true, by the way, that I had no idea what was coming on Wall Street, but I was watching the game, just saying. Anyway, so Bob Iger, shares of Disney are down 40% this year, 40%. But the company stock jumped 8% at the opening bell after the announcement of Iger's return. Disney stock closed with an increase of 6.25%. If you are hosting Thanksgiving this year, fair notice, it is time to clean all the things. So let's see how the makers of cleaning supplies are doing, shall we? Clorox is up 1.7% today. Procter & Gamble, which makes Swiffer products, among many others, climbed almost 1.25% today. Church and Dwight, which makes, anybody? OxiClean, rose 1.5% today. Bonds down, yield on the 10-year T-note, up to 3.83%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I am sure I don't need to tell anybody who's already started their Thanksgiving travel that it is busy out there. Something a bit more than 2.3 million people went through TSA checkpoints yesterday. That's more than last year, which is kind of obvious given, you know, the pandemic. But also more than in 2019. Not by much more, but more. And prices are up too, 43% on airfares, according to the most recent Consumer Price Index. The concept at issue here, of course, is demand, all of us getting on planes, and supply, not enough flights, in part because airlines are short-staffed, and they need pilots in particular. As Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, the shortage is hitting regional carriers and smaller airports the hardest.
Three-quarters of all airports in the country have fewer flights now than they did before the pandemic.
And the average loss of those airports is 31% of their flights.
Drew Jacoby-Lemos at the Regional Airline Association, which released this data, says all kinds of airports, from the major international ones to the smallest town ones, have been losing flights. But
the small, non-hub, non-primary airports that are served overwhelmingly by regional airlines, they're the ones seeing the largest impact.
60 airports have lost more than half of their flights since 2019, and 14 no longer have any commercial service at all.
That creates a big problem for communities to maintain connectivity to the larger world.
Edward Russell at Airline Weekly says this was happening before the pandemic, too.
But the pandemic accelerated the pilot situation.
When COVID hit and air travel basically ground to a halt, many airlines encouraged pilots to take buyouts or early retirement. Then, when demand came surging back faster than they expected, they couldn't hire quickly enough. Travel industry analyst Henry Hardeveldt says the pilot shortage has gotten a bit better since the summer.
The largest airlines, airlines such as Southwest or Delta, are the airlines that have had the most success in recruiting pilots. But in the airline business, it's literally borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. And in this case, the Peters are the regional airlines,
which generally don't pay as well as the major domestic and international carriers. Smaller regional flights also tend to cost more to operate per seat. Another reason they're often the first to go.
Now, if you live in a small town that's an hour or two away by car from another airport, the loss of air service is an inconvenience, but it's not truly detrimental.
But Hardeveldt says it's another story for people in communities that are now 3 or 4 hours from the nearest airport with commercial service. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
A good part of the economy here in Southern California, and honestly, a good part of the identity of this place, is tightly wrapped up with our coastline, the views, and the ocean, and the beaches. And for generations, Californians have built right up to the water's edge. Now, though, comes the reckoning, all that beachfront development and climate change. And it's coming to a head along an iconic railroad line. From KPCC, Joe Replogle has the story.
I'm standing right next to the train tracks at the southern end of San Clemente State Beach, and I can feel the breeze from the waves that are crashing up against the rock bulwarks that they've built right here to try to keep the ocean at bay. It's so close. These tracks in South Orange County are part of the only freight rail line that connects the Port of San Diego with the rest of the country. And they carry the popular Amtrak Surfliner that hugs the coast all the way up to San Luis Obispo in Central California. But in late September, authorities shut down passenger rail service and slowed freight service through San Clemente because the tracks here are in danger of sliding into the ocean.
You've got Mother Nature at work on two sides.
Daryl Johnson heads the Orange County Transportation Authority.
On the ocean side, you've got sea level rise, higher tides, storm surges. We had Hurricane Kay in the early part of September.
And on the inland side of the tracks, the slope is eroding. It's pushed the tracks outward more than 2 feet in the past year or so. The Transportation Authority's short-term plan to get train service back up and running is to pile up even more of those boulders called riprap to hold back the waves and to drive giant stakes called soil nails into the bedrock to try to stabilize the slope.
So this is clearly some type of interim solution. The question is it measured in years or decades?
And it's not just the railroad tracks that are threatened. Some of the homes above the tracks in Cypress Shore have already been deemed uninhabitable. But this shoreline wasn't always so vulnerable. There used to be a wide beach here between the train tracks and the ocean. Debbie Sheldrake shows me pictures of it on her phone. She's been surfing off this coast for 30 years.
They had volleyball courts. There were showers. None of that is there anymore. It's all gone.
Sand helps buffer the coast from storms, like a referee keeping the sometimes wild Pacific at arm's length, or beach length. It keeps the waves from digging into the base of coastal bluffs. So what happened to all that sand? Brett Sanders is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of California, Irvine. He says the ocean is sucking up sand faster than it can be replaced. And besides storm surges and sea level rise, there's an inland side to the problem.
We've kind of been slowly starving our coast of the sediment supply that it needs to be healthy and resilient.
For one thing, Sanders says, concrete and landscaping trap sediment that otherwise can be washed out to the ocean and become sand. And then there's California's ongoing drought.
Because of our drought, we haven't had storms, big storms, washing sediment to the coast at the rate we have in the past.
The state and federal governments have replenished beach sand in other parts of California over the years. And San Clemente's main beach is scheduled to get a load of sand next fall, 250,000 cubic yards of it, at a total cost of $15.1 million. San Clemente's Mayor Pro Tem Chris Duncan wants more solutions like this to protect the town's vulnerable coastline. If the beach disappears, he says, so does the town's whole reason for being.
The identity of the town and the economy of the town are completely and totally tied to the beach. It's part of the heart and soul of people who live in San Clemente.
The train, Duncan says, does bring tourists to the town, and some San Clemente residents use it to commute to Los Angeles and elsewhere. But without a long-term plan to protect the coast, he doesn't see how the tracks are any match for Mother Nature. In San Clemente, I'm Jill Replogle for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, just because it can be instructive to keep an eye on oil in times of economic uncertainty. The theory there is that a slowing global economy needs less oil, thus prices fall. The global benchmark Brent North Sea crude was off more than 5% at one point today until, lo and behold, word leaked that OPEC Plus is thinking about a production increase when it meets in a couple of weeks. 500,000 barrels a day is the number being bandied about. Even if it turns out not to come to pass, that increase, though, the leak did its job today. Crude closed off a mere 0.4%. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. It comes to us today in the form of a question. Would you take your salary in Bitcoin? And would it help if I told you that the brand name cryptocurrency is off another 2% as of this moment, a hair under $16,000 apiece? Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.